Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
Oh, that only means one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast with Chris Jericho in the background, his newest song, Judas, from his latest album, which will be going on tour this spring into the summer. So all I can say is listen in, man, because we are the Friends of Jericho. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as catch us on iTunes and Google Play, as well as YouTube, which will be going eventually too. Jeff.
Also the Facebook page, man.
And Facebook page. Catch us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook and Instagram at High Spot Podcast. And Jeff, I mean, we just listened to a few snippets there of Jericho's newest video they just released, and everybody was really excited to see it. We saw a little preview on YouTube. What do you think of the song, man?
Bittersweet, man, because it's Jericho. It's a new song, Judas, which is awesome. I've been listening to it like crazy when the video premiered. Listen, we love it. We love Chris Jericho, but you know what? It kind of means also the end, because of course you know that he's leaving to tour with Fozzy, but again, wish him nothing but the best. Very entertaining run so far with Chris Jericho.
Probably one of his best runs to date.
Love the list. Love it. Love everything Chris Jericho did. And, of course, his SmackDown against Kevin Owens was his final matchup. Then, you know what? Thank you, Chris Jericho. And we hope to see you soon. And, boy, you've left a lasting impression on your run so far in the WWE.
I like the term bittersweet, Jeff, because it explains, obviously, feeling bad. We've spoken it several times with certain superstars that have left. But, you know, honestly, me being a huge Jericho mark that I am and always kissing his ass on this show, you know, as sad as it is for him to go, I'm kind of okay with it. Because, you know what? I've spoken about this several times. I even spoke with Hamill and Mike Falcon.
How about that, man? Making a cameo on another
on Calf Crusher Radio, exactly, and kind of just promoting our show and talking about Payback as well. It's like it'd be the same way if he had left after WrestleMania and working with AJ Styles. I kind of would have been disappointed. I would have felt there was something lackluster in it. But the whole Kevin Owens situation, they became best friends, and the list and all that added on. I mean, I'm kind of fulfilled right now with Chris Jericho. I mean, I can't wait to see him go on tour. We could try to catch some of his tour dates close by to us. But again, he's left us all wanting more, but satisfied enough that he's done enough for us.
And you know the thing is, sometimes people's runs leaves you flat.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen like the WWE boys come back, and they've kind of, you know, it started great, but then flat.
We've seen RVD come back, and it's been terrible the second go around.
The Hardys are back, but you know, right now we love it. We're nostalgic. We want to see more. So,
but how long can that last?
Hopefully, that you know goes great. But Chris Jericho has been consistent every single time, every single return, everyone being something new, and this one was just you know just topped it all. So yeah, you know, listen, Brian. I remember WrestleMania 29. You're sitting there, and you're, you know, we'll put it out there. You got a little teary-eyed because you think that's the last time you probably were going to see Chris Jericho.
Well, I think I was teary-eyed because I was under the weather, and I was thinking I'm here at WrestleMania for the first time ever, and this is how I'm trying to enjoy it. But, you know, you're right. Go on.
Yeah, and, you know, you're thinking to yourself, wow, this could be the last time I see Chris Jericho. And then, you know, the fact that he lost to Fandango didn't, you know.
Oh, yeah, that left a sour taste in my mouth, too.
It made your stomach virus just, you know, implode times 10. But, you know, you thought that was going to be the end. But no, you got to see him WrestleMania in Orlando. You got to meet him in person. So you've actually had your Jericho fill.
I've had my Jericho fill. And you know what? Another fill I've had, basically, it's this card leading up to it, because it was kind of his farewell tour during WWE Payback, which is going to most likely be his last of not final dates. And, you know, we were able to speak to Aaron Rift from NoDQ.com as well and talk to him about it. So I was excited to have him on, as you guys will listen to the interview, of talking about not just Payback, but also the significance of a guy like Chris Jericho and what he's done for this business. And again, not the fact that he's retiring, you never know nowadays in this business, but again, at 46, going to be 47, how much more does he have left in the tank? I know he'll continue to come back if he feels he has something to contribute and he can do it at a high level. I just never want it to be to the point where I see him and be that one person and be like, you know what, I kind of wish he had not come back or left maybe a couple years ago because his best days were behind him. I don't want that. I want it to be similar to Shawn Michaels, where he left the crowd wanting more, and he left on a high note.
I know, but the thing is, I think Jericho is a different breed. I think he, you know, needs to be challenged. I think he needs to come back for a reason. So I think every time he's come back, he's had a reason. I think that he's not a guy that's just going to come back for the money or he's going to come back. This is the guy that, you know, is the anti-part-timer because he comes back. He does the house shows. He does everything that you need to
do. Does the full schedule.
Does the full schedule. And so I don't think he'll come back unless there's a reason to. I don't think he'll come back, you know, just for the hell of it, for nostalgia. I don't think he'll do that.
Yeah,
so
but the reasons are getting fewer and fewer in my mind because he's done it all.
Fewer and far between. Maybe one more run. Maybe one more WrestleMania. But listen, man, you can't complain. We've had about almost a year and a half of Chris Jericho, more than we thought we'd ever get. And so now he's doing his Fozzy tour. Judas is a great song, great way to come in, lead into it. It debuted this week, so it's great that we could at least hear a little snippet of it. So that's great. And again, Aaron Rift joins us here on the show like we promised you last week from NoDQ.com. You follow him on Twitter at NoDQ.DOT.com. So, I mean, just a great show we have lined up for you. And of course, we're going to recap Payback. And, you know, just talk about the world of professional wrestling with Aaron Rift.
Yeah, break down Raw and SmackDown. It's because, you know, Payback had a lot of anticipation growing, not for the fact that they're building this card and it's going to be a cross-promotion of Raw and SmackDown Live, but also this is the first pay-per-view, in my opinion, of the new WWE season. Everything started anew, so now this is the first chapter in this book that will be going on, and a lot of things will be leading up to it. Specifically, if you're a fan of Raw now, we know what's going on SmackDown in terms of the WWE Championship. Now, what's going to happen with the WWE Universal title, which is something I feel they've lacked in trying to create any prestige behind, but who knows? Now we have Brock Lesnar as the champion. We know his dates are going to be few and far between. Now who's next in line? And we'll talk about that with Aaron.
I know. So we have a great show lined up. And, of course, you know, lots to talk about. But just real quick, though, before we get to Aaron, Payback for you, your thoughts. I know we'll hear Aaron's thoughts. But just your thoughts real quick on Payback, quick synopsis of just what you thought the pay-per-view lacked and what it, you know, it kind of fulfilled you.
Payback was a bitch, man. That's all I can say. But, no, in reality, kind of surprising. I wasn't really expecting much, and maybe that's a thing we need to do nowadays, Jeff, and especially wrestling fans, not really have so many high expectations. Go in there with a clean slate and an open mind. Now, there's obviously the biggest downfall was the House of Horrors match, which we'll discuss with Aaron, but I think all in all, it was a positive note because a lot of the matches were pretty clean. Love the from the opening bell to the beginning. Some I wasn't quite sure. I think Finn Balor should have been on the main card for some reason, but I understand you're keeping him off because he hasn't really built up a storyline yet. But all in all, I think it was an okay pay-per-view. Wasn't obviously out of the park, but if I have to, and you know how stingy I am with giving pay-per-views grades, I would have to give them a B because I think they at least accomplished storyline-wise and in the ring what they wanted to do is continuing the storylines for the next following weeks leading to the next pay-per-view, which would be Extreme Rules.
I think if you're going to, you know, just summarize Payback, it's going to be three words, House of Horrors. And depending on what people's thoughts are, you know, it was trending a lot. A lot of people were talking about it. Whether it was everyone's cup of tea, I don't think so. But like I said, we talked to Aaron, I give WWE credit for what they attempted to do. But let's be honest, you know, Impact can get away with something like that. WWE, let's not call the fans snobby, but, you know, they're above that. So they know that that's, you know, you can get away with that at Ring of Honor on Impact, on, you know, on those shows. But WWE, you know, it's like Final Deletion again. Wasn't successful when it was the New Day and the Wyatts. And so now you're going to try to do this. And then there's so many, you know,
and that's the sad thing. And that's the sad thing about it, Jeff. The mere fact that we have to elaborate and just talk about that and kind of washes away everything. I mean, we had a great, you know, cruiserweight title match that was online. We had history in the making, Alexa Bliss becoming the Raw Women's Champion. We had Sheamus and Cesaro finally turn from being Sheamus and Cesaro to actually some legitimate tag team that's
a
badass.
Developments.
We saw development. And we saw a beatdown of Roman Reigns, which I'm sure all the fans enjoyed watching with Braun Strowman and him, and obviously the aftermath that led towards that for the ambulance, thinking that maybe that's gonna be something down the road for the two of them. So yeah, it's sad the fact that there were a lot of positives, which is very rare for us to talk about sometimes, and the one negative is what everybody wants to kind of dwell on.
Yeah, so I mean, House of Horrors, man, just it could have been done differently, but again, you know, I guess give WWE some kind of credit for being creative, and that's not something that you say a lot. But you know, listen, bittersweet Chris Jericho's final days in WWE. And now we kind of turn to Aaron Rift. And, you know, we had to talk about that. We had to talk about exactly just how well, Chris Jericho's run went in WWE. And here is our interview with NoDQ.com's Aaron Rift. All right, Brian, we are now talking to Aaron Rift of NoDQ.com. You can follow him on Twitter at NoDQ.com. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us, man. And I guess it finally happened. And when I'm talking about it, it's Chris Jericho. Looks like he's wrestled his last match in the WWE for a while at least. Your thoughts on SmackDown and just, you know, the inevitable happened. Chris Jericho looks like he's saying goodbye to WWE and touring with Ozzy.
Well, first off, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And I thought SmackDown was awesome. I thought that the match with Jericho and Owens was really well done. It was a nice send-off for Jericho. I liked the post-match angle with Jericho getting beat up and then Owens taking the steel chair and wrapping around Jericho's throat and throwing him into the turnbuckle corner. I thought that that was great. I thought it was a really well-done match and angle and nice send-off for Jericho. The next question is, will Jericho be back to get revenge on Owens? Will the feud continue or will they go their separate ways? That remains to be seen.
Well, speaking of that, Aaron, that was another question I wanted to kind of ask you too. I've spoken with Jeff several times about this, thinking that this has been Jericho's probably greatest run that I could ever really imagine since, you know, he's become a part-timer. In this scenario, he's 46, going to be 47. Who knows when he's done touring with Fozzy and when he has some free time to actually come back, if he does decide to come back. As a fan, just as somebody looking from the outside, looking in, at this point right now, is it even worth Chris Jericho to come back? I know it's his decision, but he's basically accomplished everything. Would you want to see him come back, or would you like to see him like go off in the sunset?
Sure, I'd love to see him come back. It's just a matter of when the time is right. I think it's good that he's taken time off and coming back and being a fresh face again. As long as he can come back and do something different than the last time, I think he'll be back as long as his body allows him to come back. I definitely feel we will see him back, and he might have another WrestleMania or two left in him, maybe even another world title run. You never know with Chris Jericho.
Chris Jericho successfully defeated Kevin Owens at Payback and, of course, loses it on SmackDown. You know, we're here to talk, actually, Payback and recap it with you because it was quite an interesting network special pay-per-view. And just your thoughts as, you know, Payback happened, just, you know, what would you rate it? What were the positives and what were the negatives in your eyes?
Overall, I thought it was a good show. I would not say it was a great show. I think it was middle of the road for a pay-per-view. I thought the matches were good, but looking back at it, I do not think that there was any one match that really stood out as an all-time classic. I think you had a series of good matches. And then, of course, there's the one match that I think people are going to look back very negatively on, and that's, of course, the House of Horrors match. I have a feeling it's going to win the prestigious NoDQ.com Worst Match of the Year award at the end of the year.
It's still early in the year. Who'd want to top that right now?
It's going to be hard to top that one. I think the WrestleMania match might be a contender as well. 2 months in a row, at least on the NoDQ.com polls, that Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt was voted the worst match of the night. So, yeah, not good for Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton, but I will say that I liked the interference from Jinder Mahal. At least they set up something for that. So, yeah, overall, I think I would give the show a B-. What did you guys think?
Well, you know what? I like the matches. The matches were pretty good. Then we got to House of Horrors, and I'm going to give you my take. I give credit for WWE trying to be creative. I think that they tried to, again, reincarnate Final Deletion somewhere in there and try to make it their own. But the thing is, with WWE fans, you know, they're not Impact. They're not Ring of Honor. They're not, you know, they're not the Independents. So when you're a fan, this is kind of, I don't want to say it's beneath them, but this is not, you know, this is not something that you're used to on WWE. I think while the intention was well, I just don't think it was, you know, there's just some small details that, you know, you're like, you know, Randy Orton coming in with a, you know, without a shirt and a limo. And then, you know, afterwards, he just popped out of nowhere. He had a fridge pile on top of him. I think I give credit to WWE for being creative, but I just don't think it was, I don't think it was planned out well.
Well, how did he get to the arena? That's what I'm wondering.
I know. That's crazy to me. And it's just, again, what do you think, Aaron? It was such a promising feud. You know, it was a long term. WWE is going to, you know, go along with it. A lot of controversy into having Randy and Bray actually at Mania. You know, just where do you think storyline wise this fell flat? Because at the end of the day, it fell flat.
I think the peak was when Randy burned down the house. I thought that that should have been like the last thing they did before WrestleMania. And then at WrestleMania, just have this crazy brawl. You know, the problem with the WrestleMania match is that they just did the special effects with the ring. And beyond that, they really did nothing. You would think that after 6 or 7 months of building this up, that these guys would have like the fight to end all fights and it would be no holds barred. It would be complete chaos, and it really wasn't. It was just a match with the crappy special effects. So yeah, I think after the fire with the house being set on fire, I think it really went downhill after that.
Do you think they overused the fact? I mean, I spoke to Jeff. I equivalent this close to like, not that I want to put it there, but you know, Ultimate Warrior, Papa Shango. They need to use all those special effects to make up for the fact that they couldn't get it from bell to bell. We've seen Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt now. I've seen them at least twice, WrestleMania and this one. And I have to say, I don't think their in-ring chemistry was something to, you know, speak highly of. Was maybe that a reason why WWE was probably going through all this whole, you know, nostalgia and these paranormal things?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think if the two of them were allowed to have the kind of match that I think they should have had, I think it would have been fine. I just think that they were being held back at WrestleMania, you know. I think they should have like brawled into the crowd, maybe used weapons, maybe do like a no DQ match. It should have been like, you know, a grudge match to settle a grudge rather than just a regular match. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we shift our attention to another match, which I thought was interesting, was Roman Reigns and of course, Braun Strowman. You know, it makes feelings because, hey, Braun got over. Braun really beat the crap out of Roman Reigns, although Roman Reigns, of course, you see him towards the end walking on his own power. Your thoughts on where this match was rated on your as far as during the night, and also where do you think, you know, the future goes between these guys? Because it seems like the ambulance is a big part of the storyline. Do you see a ambulance match at Extreme Rules?
Yeah, I would expect it to be either an ambulance match or a stretcher match. That certainly seems to be what they are teasing with the ambulance being brought into play so many times. I think it was a good match that they did at the Payback pay-per-view. And I'm really curious to see how they follow this up, because we have the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. What a wonderful name there.
I can't wait to hear you write about that one.
Yeah, we got that coming up. The question is, who is Lesnar facing? Is he facing Braun Strowman? Is he facing Roman Reigns? Is he facing Finn Balor? We really don't know right now. It's all up in the air. I think that if Strowman is facing Lesnar at the pay-per-view, then I think it was definitely the right decision for Strowman to win at Payback. But the question is, you got Extreme Rules coming up. So what's going to happen is Roman Reigns going to lose again to Braun Strowman, or is Roman Reigns going to get his win back? I'm really curious. I'm not sure where they're going with all this right now, but I did like what they did at Payback.
Yeah, something that's unsure too, for me at least, is that we've seen the build-up towards this match of Payback between Braun and Roman Reigns. The mere fact that they're trying to make Roman Reigns, which is really difficult, a sympathetic figure. I mean, basically, in my opinion, when you have him being beaten down and being tossed in an ambulance and fans are chanting, "You deserve it," speaks pretty highly of where the fan reaction is in terms of getting behind Roman Reigns. From a booking standpoint right now, I mean, granted, he walked under his own power. It's not over between the two of these. Where do you see the direction they're going with Roman Reigns? Everybody says heel turn, that's an easy thing to do. Is it that easy to do right now with a guy and a character like Roman Reigns? Because right now he's out of the Universal title picture, for now at least.
I think it's very unlikely. I think if they were going to do it, they would have done it at WrestleMania. That would have been the time to do it. I think, honestly, they're going to just keep doing what they're doing. Roman Reigns is going to be the same character he's been for the last, what has it been now, 3 years? I think nothing's going to change. As far as they're concerned, it's a success because people are reacting to him, and he sells merchandise with the women and kids, and the men, they may be booing him, but they're still showing up to the arenas, and that's all WWE cares about.
Aaron, a match that I think was a good match, you know, on paper and a good quality match in the ring, but kind of the House of Horrors match kind of, you know, killed
the wind out of the building.
Yeah, exactly. Seth Rollins, Samoa Joe. I'm a little surprised at the outcome, just because, you know, you'd think it's, you know, Samoa Joe's first match against Seth Rollins, and you want to get the win on him. You know, your thoughts real quick on Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins.
Well, I agree with that. I think that if it was my decision, I would have had Joe win the first match. You know, I talked about this with my guys at NoDQ.com. You know, we talked about how Seth Rollins has been selling this knee injury for a while now. And, you know, just a month ago, they did that thing where the doctor said no doctor in America would clear him. And Seth Rollins just somehow keeps managing to get by match after match. And I think Joe should have won and then maybe did something to Rollins, and Rollins took a few weeks off and then came back and got his win back at Extreme Rules. And then you could just ignore the whole knee injury thing and just drop that and let Seth Rollins just go back to being normal again. I think I would have preferred that. But I could see this feud going on for a couple months. I could see them doing a match at Extreme Rules and then it might continue on through the summer. I could see this being a lengthy feud.
This feud that you're talking about being lengthy, I agree with you, Aaron. Is it something that's going to help keep Seth Rollins occupied in the mere fact that you just mentioned before, talking about the Universal title picture, who's going to be facing Brock Lesnar, Strowman, Finn Balor? Could you see somewhere in the fact that Finn Balor can immediately step right in there after his interview on Miz TV and basically embarrassing The Miz, which is now a standard on Miz TV? Yeah. Could Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar be next in your mind?
Well, I think Finn Balor should be facing Brock Lesnar. I hate the fact that Balor has not gotten his rematch. You know, he should be, I think his character should be demanding the rematch on television, saying, hey, look, I want my title shot. Either Brock Lesnar shows up, you hand me the belt, this is ridiculous. You know, something like that. You know, if I was Finn Balor, you know, that character, I would demand my title rematch, you know, instead of Brock Lesnar sitting at home. It just makes no sense. So I'd like to see Balor get his match with Lesnar. They could do a lot of matches with Lesnar. Lesnar versus Balor, Lesnar versus Reigns, Lesnar versus Rollins, Lesnar versus Joe. I'd love to see that match. Oh, yeah. I'd love to see Joe run Lesnar out of WWE next year, but my gut feeling is it's going to be Reigns. We'll see. So there's a lot of possibilities, and I'm guessing in the end we will get to see all those matches. You know, Brock is supposed to be doing a heavier schedule for this next year. And one would think he'll be facing all those guys at some point. I hope so. Otherwise, what are you paying him for if you're not going to use him? You know, you might as well get these matches done if you're going to keep Lesnar around. That's just my take on it.
We were talking to Aaron Riff from NoDQ.com, a great website. He does a great job on that, really breaking stories and giving everyone the latest information on all that is wrestling news. Aaron, a little bit of a shocker in San Jose, which is Bayley's hometown. A little surprising that Alexa Bliss became the Raw Women's Champion, thus breaking records and becoming the first ever woman to be a Raw and SmackDown Women's Champion. Your thoughts on Alexa Bliss walking away? And I got to tell you, she is without a doubt above and beyond right now, if not first or second. She's up there as the best female in WWE right now.
Oh, I agree totally on that. I think she did a really good job on Raw with that promo standing up on the pedestal. I thought that was very well done. Good promo by her. Yeah, she's been great. I think the timing was a little off. You know, I don't think that Bayley should be losing in her hometown. I think that was a mistake. But at the same time, I think WWE pretty much dropped the ball with Bayley's run as champion. I think she should have won it at WrestleMania, not Fastlane, and beaten Charlotte's streak at WrestleMania instead of Fastlane, and not had help from Sasha Banks. You know, she should have won cleanly. I just think WWE dropped the ball with the entire Bayley run. So I think it was definitely the right decision to have Alexa win. I just think they should have done it another night besides San Jose and Bayley's hometown.
What do you think contributed to the fact that Bayley seemed to have lost so much momentum? Was it just bad timing on the part of the WWE bringing her in at the time where the Charlotte Sasha Banks feud was so hot at that time?
She should have been chasing it longer. You know, she's an underdog character. I think she won it too soon. You know, they should have done it at WrestleMania when it would have been more memorable. Had her maybe she lost to Charlotte at the Rumble, right? My memory's a little foggy.
Yes, yeah. She did.
Okay, so yeah, she lost at the Rumble, and then I would have spent the next 2 to 3 months building her back up, and then at WrestleMania, that's when she got her rematch and won the title. That's what I would have done, at least. I think the whole Fastlane thing was a mistake, and having Sasha get involved was a mistake as well.
Speaking of Sasha, she also seems to be somebody who's kind of lost in the shuffle as well. I mean, they're showing hints that maybe, who knows, there's going to be a backstabbing scenario where Sasha was kind of getting fed up and wanting to get a title match against Bayley. Now that Alexa Bliss is the champion, you can only assume she's going to now continue a small rivalry now with Bayley. Where does Sasha Banks fit in all this right now?
I think Sasha's definitely better as a heel. I think that that should be the long-term direction. I'm not sure if it is. I mean, they've been teasing it, you know, that they were going to have a confrontation on Raw the other week. I think Sasha came out and basically challenged Bayley, and then you had Alexa coming out and all that stuff went down. I think they should definitely do the heel turn from Sasha at some point, and maybe SummerSlam, you know, work on a goal, you know, set up that match at SummerSlam and start building towards that. That's what I would do at least.
You know, talking about heel turns, one of the turns that we saw at Payback was Cesaro and Sheamus finally having enough of being goody two-shoes and shaking the hands of the Hardys. Do you think that we've seen the beginning of Broken Matt Hardy on Sunday? Or because they've been teasing it a while now on Twitter and on social media, been kind of teasing it. Well, we know that WWE has, you know, what we think has made a deal with Impact to get the whole, you know, Broken Matt Hardy brand. Do you think we're going to start to see Broken Matt Hardy be interjected in WWE programming? And, you know, I think it's really good that Sheamus and Cesaro finally turned heel.
I agree. I think that was the right decision also to give them some more longevity and freshen things up with them a bit. I think we will see Matt Hardy do the Broken gimmick. It's just a matter of time. There's too much money to be made with that gimmick. And also, the Hardys are going to have a short shelf life as a nostalgia act. I think it's going to give them some longevity by doing the Broken gimmick. So I definitely think it will happen. It's just a matter of when, not if.
They definitely need a way of not only getting that Broken Matt Hardy character. I mean, like you said, nostalgia act can only last so long. But right. I'm more excited for Sheamus and Cesaro because maybe now they're being given the opportunity to, who knows, be the face of the tag team division as soon as the Hardys separate and break up and those titles are passed on to Sheamus and Cesaro. Something I was very curious about, I think that doesn't get much attention, but to me kind of stole show, in my opinion, would be the Cruiserweight Championship match between I call him Adrian Neville. Everybody likes to go with one names nowadays. All right, so let's say Neville and Austin Aries. Tremendous match. I think they've just rejuvenated the Cruiserweight division since we first saw it, you know, for the Cruiserweight Classic on the network. I mean, I still remember the glory days, Jeff, when we're dating ourselves of the WCW days when the Cruiserweight title meant
something. Not quite like that, though. That was like lightning in a bottle with the WCW Cruiserweights. But just that matchup in general, like, do you think, you know, there was a proper ending between Austin Aries and Neville?
I want to see Austin Aries win the title. I definitely feel that should be the outcome of this storyline and feud. But you know, I think the finish there was just designed to keep it going a little bit longer. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of it. I'm traditionally not a huge fan of DQs on pay-per-view, but I guess now it doesn't really matter as much because we're all paying $9.99 a month instead of $50-$60 or whatever. So I'm okay with it. You know, as long as Aries gets it in the end, I definitely would like to see Aries have a run as the Cruiserweight champion. I think it would definitely be well-deserved.
Aaron, what do you think is missing with the Cruiserweight division with 205 Live? I think personally it needs to be taped at Full Sail. I think it needs to be a separate programming. I don't think people want to stay after, you know, a long night on SmackDown to stay afterwards to see it. You get crowds that are, you know, sparse, you know, in the arenas. What do you think is missing, or do you think anything is missing in the Cruiserweight division?
Well, I do think that would be a decent idea. It's certainly something that they should consider. But, you know, I think the easiest solution would be to just tape 205, not make it live, just do it before SmackDown. Because the thing is, if you've been to a wrestling show, I'm sure you've noticed this, that the crowd is usually really hot at the beginning because they're eager to see the matches. You know, they just got in the building. You know, they want to see the action. So I think it's good to do the Cruiserweight action and kick that off to get people hot for the main show. So I would just do the 205 Cruiserweight show before, tape it before SmackDown, and then just air it on the tape delay after SmackDown. And, you know, I've talked about this too on ODQ. I think they should get rid of the whole changing the ropes and changing the look and just make it part of the regular show, you know, I'm not really a big fan of them doing all that stuff. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, there's too much time where you forget about the matches in between. And give credit to the ring crew, man. I mean, we've seen them live. We actually seen them actually switch the ropes and everything like that. That is a tough chore, and to do it twice in the 3-hour show, that's crazy.
Yeah, it just seems like a waste of time. It doesn't seem like it's necessary. It's not like it's getting anybody more invested in it. People like the cruiserweights because they do all the cool stuff, and that's the other thing too. You know, I think it's good for character development. I think it's good to have character development, but I think that with the cruiserweights, it's not really necessary for them to have that character development as much. You know, what brought them to the dance was the fact that they could do some amazing stuff that, you know, like the Cruiserweight Classic, stuff that 99% of human beings cannot do. I think that they should just be going out there and doing that kind of stuff, and not, you know, the stuff with the soap opera storylines. I think it's not necessary for the cruiserweight. So I would consider just dropping that aspect of it. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen or not. You know, WWE's attitude is they got to make everybody a sports entertainer, even the cruiserweights.
Oh, I hate that term, sports entertainer. But again, I guess we have to get used to it for the mere fact it is the WWE. But speaking of something you mentioned before about character development, which is such a huge integral part of what WWE does, and especially if you're trying to bring up the Cruiserweight division, I mean, we talk about the Payback pre-show, and two characters in my mind, you know, a.k.a. The Club, Gallows and Anderson, who to me, and Jeff has been advocate of this as we've done this show, of how much he feels the WWE kind of messed up on this one, which I'm sure the list goes on and on for that of what they've messed up.
I want to care, Aaron, but now I don't care about them, and that's really a sad state of affairs to say about The Club.
Yeah, I agree on that. It seemed like just a month or two ago they were starting to regain some momentum, and then they just lost it again by losing at the pre-show match against Enzo and Cass. I would have liked to have seen Anderson and Gallows. Well, I guess that wouldn't have worked because, you know, I was going to say Anderson and Gallows go back to SmackDown and reunite with AJ, but now that AJ's a face, that really would not have worked. I'm not sure what you do with those guys at this point. They just seem to be stuck in a certain position. And now with Sheamus and Cesaro being heels, you know, those guys are going to take the top heel tag team spot, and Anderson and Gallows are going to be down the card a little bit. So, yeah, I'm not sure what you do with those guys at this point. I really don't know.
I always had to believe that when Finn Balor came back, he would have this pent-up frustration, like you said, demanding to get his title rematch back, and it seemed like there was some tension between him and Seth Rollins. I was thinking, what perfect time for a new turnaround for Finn Balor to come back as a heel, because as we know in his times in New Japan, the Bullet Club, he's been best when he has been a heel because he can showcase more of a personality instead of being so clean cut. Do you think the possibility down the road of a Finn Balor, Gallows and Anderson reunion might happen?
I would not rule it out, but just in my own personal opinion, I'd rather see Rollins turn. I think Rollins' babyface run has been pretty disappointing since he came back from the injury last year. I'd like to see Rollins maybe turn and have Anderson and Gallows and go against Finn Balor. I think that would be an interesting storyline.
How long before Big Cass goes to Enzo and says you talk too much and gives him a boot in the face? Because I don't know what it is about Enzo, and here's a guy that I loved on the mic and has great mic skills, but as of late has been kind of like a gnat. And how far is it before Big Cass just has enough?
Well, I'm not a fan of how Enzo's been portrayed. You know, I think he has potential, but they're basically just making him out to be like a joke. I think that Big Cass is going to get a big push at some point. I doubt he's going to turn on Enzo. I think Cass is going to be a big baby face. I could see them just doing the whole Roman Reigns thing all over again with Big Cass. Maybe not this coming Royal Rumble, but the next Royal Rumble. I could see Big Cass winning it and getting the monster push, you know, 2018 or 2019 more likely. I could see that happening.
So, you know, we already talked to Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. We gave, you know, our thoughts on that. And, you know, I love how they have continuity in their matches. I think, you know, the whole finger on the rope is a great way to, you know, just add like a little bit comedy into their matches. So we know that they had a great rivalry. So, and we head into Raw. And besides a couple of bright spots, and which Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and The Miz saved to me that show, Raw had its one of its lowest ratings. Your thoughts of just Raw in general, because Aaron, I know this is your job, it's our job too, but I find myself falling asleep now and like just catching the main event. You know, right now, what do you think is the issue with Raw, and you know, just your thoughts of it from this past Monday?
3 hours. I mean, that's the biggest problem, first of all.
Yeah, CJBL, 3 hours.
That's not going to change, though. You know, they make the money with that third hour. USA Network's happy. As long as the ratings are halfway decent, they're not going to cut the third hour. So, you know, I think that I'm not really sure what needs to change other than just make a more compelling show. And that's a complicated endeavor. You know, it's not that easy to make a more compelling show. In order to do that, you need to take risks and try different things. And as we've seen from WWE for many years, they're quite comfortable just doing what they know works. And as long as they get people coming to the arenas, as long as the network numbers are good, as long as everything's stable and they're showing a profit, they're just going to take the safe route and not try to experiment too much. You know, it's a big contrast from the 90s when you had WCW as major competition and WWE had to take chances. They had to do things that were controversial and you know, push the envelope. And now they don't really do it. They just rely on what they've been doing for decades now and what they know is safe to do and will not alienate viewers, you know. And then they also control the marketplace. So even if they do something that fans hate, it doesn't really matter because they dominate everything and people are going to be watching no matter what, as we've seen. You know, people complain about Roman Reigns, but they're still watching.
Aaron, do you think that the whole shakeup, superstar shakeup, was needed? And do you think that whole cluster F that was this past couple of weeks with that shakeup had something to do with just the lack of interest in Monday Night Raw so far? Do you think actually it was needed that we have a superstar shakeup?
I like the idea of doing it once a year. I think it should be done just to change up things a little bit. But it doesn't really accomplish much when you have the same guys feuding on Raw that were feuding on SmackDown. I'm talking about Ambrose and The Miz. So what's the point of doing a shakeup when you're just going to do the same matches?
No, I completely agree with that. I mean, for the mere fact that I was a huge component of the fact that we're going to see The Miz and Dean Ambrose again. It didn't work the first time. Why would they do it again? My question to you, Aaron, is, I mean, we can dive into, you know, the types of storylines and rivalries that are going to happen, but when you compare the two, SmackDown Live and Raw, obviously one to 3 hour show, one to 2 hour show, but it just seems like SmackDown Live just has the ability right now to have so much more compelling storylines. Is that something right now that Raw obviously is lacking, but what else can they do in terms of story writing? Is it just something for the fact that they're just trying to fill in gaps and that's why it's becoming so stale?
I agree with that about Raw. I definitely feel like a lot of segments on Raw are they're being stretched out longer than they need to be just to fill time. They have 3 hours to fill. And, you know, I felt like maybe as good as that Alexa promo was on Raw, I think it was a bit long. I think they could have shortened it a couple of minutes. I think a lot of segments on that show could have been shortened and I think would have been more entertaining to watch. You know, when they drag it out, it's not quite as entertaining. So there's that. You know, a lot of it is due to the fact that it's 3 hours. And, you know, just the fact that I'm never surprised when I watch Raw. You know, every once in a while they do something that surprises me. And obviously because I'm doing NoDQ.com, you know, not a lot surprises me, but every once in a while they do pull a rabbit out of a hat, and I do see something that is unexpected and very enjoyable. Like you know, when Owens turned on Jericho, I thought that was really well done, and I actually wasn't expecting it on that night. I thought that was a great segment. Actually, a lot of the Jericho and Owens stuff, and I'm not sure how much input they have. I'm guessing Jericho does have some input in his storylines, and you know, maybe that's part of the problem too, is that guys in WWE are not given enough creative freedom to do their own storylines and come up with their own promos. You know, everything is so overly scripted now and overproduced. You know, back in the 90s and before, guys just went out there and winged it. They would improvise and maybe have bullet points. And now it's just everything scripted pretty much word for word for most of the guys. And there are exceptions. And you notice it with guys like Jericho. Some of the guys are able to go out there and be more creative with their storylines, and it does show.
You know, Chris Jericho, again, making the fact that he will be missed while he's away touring with Fozzy. You know,
are you going to miss Jericho, Jeff, or are you going to miss the list?
I'm going to miss the list. But, you know, Chris Jericho, just again, adding that insight and adding his own ideas and just having that great run, he will be missed. And the fact that he was going on SmackDown kind of made it bittersweet, too, with him winning the U.S. Championship. Something we can agree on that was a great thing that Raw did was bring back Kurt Angle. But unfortunately, I'm right now to the idea that it's been lackluster. I don't know if they've forgotten how funny Kurt Angle can be. I don't understand what creative is thinking about. Are they waiting for Stephanie to come back so she can, you know, have the dialogue with Kurt Angle? Why, to me, is it that the whole Kurt Angle thing has been lackluster as of late?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say that I'm going to miss the scarf, that light-up scarf. I thought that was pretty nifty. I thought that was a cool thing that he had.
Yeah, I have to admit, Aaron, I didn't think anything would ever top off the jacket, but that scarf was pretty unbelievable. I'm sure it cost a pretty penny for Chris Jericho to do that.
Absolutely. As far as Angle goes, it seems like they're doing something now with Angle and Bray Wyatt. So, you know, I'll give it time and see how it plays out. But yeah, I get what you're saying about Angle doing the comedy. You know, that first night he was in, he did the stuff with Sami Zayn, which I thought was funny, and Enzo and Cass, and I'd like to see more of that, more backstage segments with Angle, you know, in his office with his gold medals and all that stuff and the wrestlers. I'd like to see more of those funny backstage skits. I definitely agree on that. I think a lot of fans are just anticipating him wrestling again too. That's also part of the deal. I think fans are just waiting for something to happen that'll cause Angle to come out of retirement and get back in the ring. Will it happen? I mean, right now, that's still a big question mark, but I think a lot of fans are hopeful and waiting for that to possibly happen.
Oh, believe me, Kurt Angle's waiting for it just as much. We're able to see him around WrestleMania time and speak to him for a few seconds and a few minutes, and he was like, he has that itch. He wants to get back in the ring. I think he wants to end his career there, maybe one or two more matches. So I guess it's just a waiting game to see if that happens. But speaking of Bray Wyatt, it looks like there's something going to go on between him and Kurt Angle. It really seems now they're really going to be pushing Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor. And if anybody's a huge fan, they're going to be like, oh, I can't wait to see the entrances these two have when they face each other. But despite that, is this something, again, is going to be similar to what we saw with Randy Orton, where it's going to be a lot of paranormal, a lot of, you know, gothic stuff?
Oh, please, no.
To fill in the gaps from not getting it from bell to bell with these two?
Probably. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of Bray Wyatt promos, and then in the end, I think Finn Balor is going to beat him.
At this point right now, Aaron, does Bray Wyatt, despite everything that's happened, have any more credibility left in him?
I think he needs to win some big, big, high-profile matches clean. I think he squeaked by too many matches, and he's lost, obviously, a lot of matches. So I think in order to rebuild his credibility, he needs to beat somebody clean. Is Finn Balor the guy? I'm not sure, but I think he needs to win some matches on his own without any kind of trickery or you know, little kids or whatever he has in terms of interference. And now he's on his own, apparently. No Harper, no Rowan, no Strowman. So, yeah, I think he definitely could benefit from winning some matches clean.
You know what I found confusing, too, and just going back to Payback for 1 second, how come the title wasn't on the line there? Wasn't he do a rematch?
No sense in the writing, man.
Wasn't he do a rematch? Yeah. Like, it kind of went over my head in the beginning when I was watching. I was like, wait a minute. They never announced that the title was on the line. I only assumed it was. But then ultimately it wasn't, so I was like, okay, so he won.
Well,
the rivalry,
what happens when you assume in the WWE?
I make an ass out of you?
Well, I mean, sometimes. Okay. Well, you know.
Okay. But yeah, that was pretty peculiar with the mere fact that he's trying to get credibility, but yet, you know, he ended up winning a battle, which should have been for the title to begin with. So I'm just curious for Bray Wyatt for the mere fact that you're right, he has to win some more high profile matches. But he's definitely had opportunities, and we keep going back to WrestleMania 30. He should have beaten John Cena in New Orleans.
That's where it turned, Aaron. That's where we feel it. That's where he should have gotten the victory, and it would have been a lot different, I think.
I agree. I think Bray should have turned babyface last year. I think he got hurt, right? He got hurt right after WrestleMania 32, and then he came back as a heel, and you know, that was unfortunate for him. I think he would have been great as a babyface, and even now, I think turning him would be a good idea.
I would like to see him. Not that he should be aligned with anybody, but, you know, Bo Dallas isn't doing anything. And I think he would make a great, you know, Wyatt family member who actually is a family member. What do you think?
I agree totally, 100%. If Bray Wyatt's going to stay heel for the time being, then that would be a great way to get Bo Dallas back in the mix and give him some credibility and give his career a little boost. I love the idea.
I still believe in him.
No, I really do. I mean, this is a former NXT.
Believe.
You believe still, right? This is a former NXT champion. Why not give him another opportunity, especially with his brother, to make great television? You know, credibility, as we've been talking about with Bray Wyatt, Aaron, and that word carries over into SmackDown because a lot of people are not finding Jinder Mahal as the number one contender for the WWE title credible. Right. In my opinion, Aaron, is we bitch a lot. We bitch about Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, John Cena, and we're like, well, we need to see somebody that's not them become a contender, become a champion. And then when we get Jinder Mahal, I get it, Jinder Mahal, but I'm not one of those to not give him a chance. So the fan, to me, is kind of hypocritical because we don't want to see Cena and Orton and the rest and Roman Reigns, but when it comes to Jinder Mahal, they're trying something new, they hate it. Your thoughts?
The problem was it was done too abruptly. I think if they had spent 3 or 4 months slowly building up Jinder Mahal, then I think fans would have been more accepting of it. The fact that it was just thrown together after 6 months of Mahal never winning and all of a sudden we're supposed to believe he's the number one contender. I mean, that's a big credibility issue, and it's hard to really suspend disbelief that anybody can take this guy seriously when he's never won a match in 6 months. Maybe he won one or two matches in 6 months. So that's my big issue with it. I have no problem with Mahal getting a push. I just think that they should have done a better job and built up to it. And it just goes to show that they really don't think long term, because if they were going to give Mahal a push, if they knew about this months ago, they would have protected him better. The fact that they just did this so abruptly tells me that this was something they put together at the last minute.
You think it was more of a business standpoint because they were doing so much promotion to wanting to go back into that
India?
Yes. I do think that was a motivation for doing it. But again, if they had slowly built him up over the past several months, I think it would have been a more effective build for the Backlash pay-per-view. Hey. I'm really curious to see how the fans react to this, you know, in Chicago. Those Chicago fans, they're known for turning on things, so we'll see how that goes.
Is that their rep?
They'll be chanting CM Punk all match between him and Randy.
If they do not chant CM Punk, I will be shocked beyond belief.
But again, hey, you know, leave for the WWE to give you some surprises, right, in terms of the whole Jinder Mahal angle. But another surprise for me is, you know, Charlotte now kind of being devalued a little bit on her way out of Raw, coming to SmackDown, immediately competing for the SmackDown Women's title, thinking that she was going to actually achieve that feat before Alexa Bliss. And now it seems like there is a babyface turn for Charlotte Flair. I'm kind of torn between this because I can understand their point business-wise. They want to make her the face of SmackDown Live. They want to kind of turn her and give her a new fresh run. But to me, she's just done so well as a heel that if you convert her back to a babyface, I feel it just really hinders her character. What are your thoughts on the fact that they're turning Charlotte now into a babyface?
I think it was too soon. I think she had some mileage left as a heel. I think she could have had a good 6 months on SmackDown as a heel before you turn her. I just think they did it too soon. I definitely think she has potential to be the top female star as a babyface. I just think they could have gotten more mileage out of her as a heel.
You know, they teased it with Becky Lynch, and I think that would have been smart to do that. I think if you're going to have Charlotte and Naomi be, you know, your two faces, I think it would have been really smart. I know you got Carmella, too, in there in Tamina, but let's be honest. It would be Natty and Becky Lynch as a heel. They teased that. Any chance Becky Lynch might turn?
I'm wondering that. I saw what they did on SmackDown. I thought that was a good segment. And maybe she will turn at some point. Who knows? Maybe that will happen in the next couple months. I would not have a problem with that. I think Becky would do well as a heel. From what I understand, she's been doing a heel act in the indies before she came to WWE. So I think there's definitely potential for her to work well as a heel.
So we've talked about SmackDown. We've talked about Raw. We've talked about Payback. And I know Brian wants to get in one more question in. So Brian, you know, I want to talk to Aaron here while we have him.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest question right now, or I'm really puzzled for, is the mere fact that it's during the whole WWE Superstar shakeup, everyone's so excited to see the call-up of Shinsuke Nakamura. he has now kind of been put in the same position as he was in NXT, where we're not really seeing, well, he's doing dirk matches, but we're not seeing him in the ring. And now his debut was announced will be at Backlash. Do you feel they're trying to do the exact same thing here, or do you get the sense that maybe WWE isn't confident that Shinsuke can make that transition as he did during NXT because they're not allowing him to speak?
Well, I think it's best to not have him speak a lot. I think he's best off just getting in the ring and doing his thing. You know, there are guys that have
broken English. It's amazing his broken English. What are you talking about? It makes him so much more lovable.
Well, I mean, I think he needs to get rid of that mouthpiece at least when he talks. I would agree with a lot of people that were critical of that. But I think that he's best off just going out there and doing his thing. You know, Goldberg got over crazy in WCW and he almost never talked. Sting went for like a year without talking, and he was the biggest star in WCW for that year. So it can be done, you know, but I think WWE is going to try to turn him into a sports entertainer, and time will tell if that's a success or not. I don't know.
We're here with Aaron Rift. Aaron, let's tie some loose ends and let's talk about some news around the world of professional wrestling. That's what we still call professional wrestling. Billy Corgan buying NWA, your thoughts on that? Of course, we all know how everything happened with Impact. Billy Corgan is definitely a wrestling fan. He won't take no for an answer. He'll roll up his sleeves and get back in there. Your thoughts on him purchasing NWA?
I'm happy for him. I'm glad that he has the passion to do this and to stay involved. And, you know, he's a very creative guy, so I'm curious to see what he does with the NWA. Can he take this brand name that was once, you know, a really big deal? Can he make it something special again? I'm really curious to see what he can do with it, and I'm definitely excited about it. I'm curious to see what he does.
Something I'm really excited about too, Aaron, is the mere fact that now Adam Cole, former Ring of Honor heavyweight champion, a member of the Bullet Club, is now officially a free agent. People have been talking about rumors that he possibly would go to WWE. First of all, I want to ask, I guess, a two-part question. What's the likelihood he does go to WWE, and if he does go there, does he start at NXT, or is he well-known enough to begin on the main roster?
Oh, that's a great question, both of them. I think as far as going to WWE, I would say it's almost a sure thing. It will happen at some point. Almost everybody ends up in WWE at some point. Even Sting ended up in WWE. I think the Young Bucks will end up in WWE eventually. I think Kenny Omega will be there eventually. It's just a matter of time. You know, AJ was in TNA for all those years. Eventually, he ended up in WWE. So I think it will happen. And I think WWE should definitely pick up Adam Cole now. I think that the timing is good. I think he should go to NXT because NXT needs some marquee stars right now, with Nakamura being called up. And, you know, a lot of those really talented guys have been called up. There's still some really talented guys left there. But I think NXT could use another name or two of marquee value. So I would definitely bring in Adam Cole, have him go into NXT for a year and then call him up. You know, there's no need for him to be in the main roster right now. They got tons of guys. The main roster, you have Nakamura, you have all these guys, Samoa Joe, that are being pushed strong right now. I think that there might be a chance Adam Cole would get lost in the shuffle if he's called up too soon. So I would put him in NXT first.
Yeah, I think he's made, you know, no qualms about being able to go to NXT. He said he'd, you know, listen, the guy like Nakamura, he went to NXT and they didn't think they needed it, but you learn the camera positions, you learn all that stuff the WWE way, I guess. So I think Adam Cole would be open to it. I think he said that also publicly too on Stone Cold's podcast. So I think he'd be willing to go there. I think NXT, you know, the men's roster, it's kind of a little bit barren once you get past Roode and Drew McIntyre.
Right.
Your thoughts real quick on NXT. You know, they had a little bit of a lull. San Antonio NXT was a little bit shaky, and I think they rebounded well with Orlando. Just your thoughts on the future of NXT. And listen, I think Drew McIntyre has it. I think it's weird that this guy was even, you know, squashed on the main roster in WWE. Just your thoughts in general on NXT and its future.
Well, again, I think that NXT needs another couple of marquee stars. I think, you know, a year or two ago, NXT had a lot of star power in this developmental group. And now it feels like, you know, the biggest names, Samoa Joe and Nakamura and Finn Balor, they're all on the main roster now. And you need to fill that void. And Bobby Roode is great and all, but I think you need some more guys. They do have Chris Hero there and, you know, I think they could benefit from having some more women coming in. You know, I'm glad that they're bringing in Candice LeRae. She was at the last tapings, and I'd like to see more women brought into NXT. And I think they need a little bit of a boost in the tag division as well. It's unfortunate they were not able to get the Young Bucks. I definitely feel I think the Young Bucks want to be on the main roster. I don't think they want to go the NXT route. But I'm hopeful sooner than later we'll see the Young Bucks in WWE. I mean, those guys are great. I mean, I was watching those guys in Southern California back in 2006 when they were just starting. And you know, they were awesome back then. So I always saw something in those guys.
You know, you talk about California, and of course, New Japan will be there for the G1 in July. Your thoughts, first of all, Aaron, if you get a chance to do that, you should check it out. And your thoughts on New Japan slowly making its way to the States and California for this event. You know, it's already sold out. I think there's going to be more tickets available in 5 days or so. Your thoughts on New Japan and whether it's a good idea to head over to the States. Obviously, the interest is there. Your thoughts right. on G1 heading into the California in July?
Well, I mean, there's definitely the market for it. There's definitely a demand for that promotion to come out here to, I'm actually not in California anymore. So, you know, if I was still in California, I would definitely consider going to that. But like you said, it's already sold out. You know, I definitely think it's a good move for them if they can make money off of it. And I'm hopeful that PWG will start running bigger venues because they sell out those shows, you know, instantly. And they're charging something like $80 a pop now for tickets, which for indie wrestling shows is quite a lot of money. So I'm surprised PWG hasn't started running bigger buildings yet because they obviously have the demand for it. So that's one thing I'd like to see from PWG is maybe expand a little bit. So if you know the New Japan thing goes really well, maybe PWG will start running in bigger venues. We'll see.
It would be an exciting time because, you know, despite being just a wrestling fan in general, the whole scenario of New Japan is just, to me, so exciting. It's something a little bit different than what we're used to. So it definitely brings that appeal to certain wrestling fans. How much success we'll have, we'll see what happens after this event occurs. But talking about New Japan real quick, I just want to get your thoughts on this. You had mentioned before Kenny Omega, right? And we talked about Adam Cole and the Young Bucks and how the Young Bucks probably wouldn't want to start at NXT. They probably want to start on the main roster. The whole excitement happened around Royal Rumble time. Would Kenny Omega sign with the WWE? And there's always going back and forth in terms of creative and things of that standpoint. With a guy like Kenny Omega, though, I always feel, and I've discussed this with Jeff, that as much as I would love to see him in the WWE, you know, I think he would do great things. The mere fact that we talk about the hindrance of character development, the mere fact that things are scripted and the WWE wants you to do it their way, could you see a scenario occur where you said, everybody most likely would go to the WWE. Could you see a scenario where Kenny Omega will be that one person that won't just because he's just so hell-bent on his character being his own that he won't go for that particular reason?
You never know because anything can happen. If there's an opportunity for him to come in and make a huge difference and be the top star, I think he would do it. It's just a matter of will that opportunity come or not, and we really don't know. It's hard to say. People can get injured. Any number of things can happen. There could be some sort of issue in New Japan. You never know. There's so many different factors. Really, anything can happen. But just based off of history and how guys almost always end up in WWE, I think it's inevitable that one day he'll be there. It's just a matter of when, and we really don't know. It just depends on the circumstances and how the cards align.
Aaron, checking out your website this afternoon, looking at it, and news kind of broke that over the weekend, Sean Waltman, X-Pac, was missing. It was kind of scary, you know, and then Kevin Nash sent out a tweet saying he was fine. Then, you know, reading your website saying what happened on the airplane and, you know, having, you know, been caught with, you know, drug paraphernalia. It's a sad story because he's turned his life around and everyone made it seem like it was, you know, nothing serious, that he no-showed a wrestling event. What's the latest update on X-Pac that you could give us?
Well, nothing really besides what's up on the website right now. I think that it's a really unfortunate situation. The times I've met him, he was always really nice to me. I think it sucks what he's going through. And, you know, I don't know what the deal is. I'm not going to speculate on what's going on with the drug charges. But if he needs help, I'm hoping he's able to get the help. And I don't think jail time is going to fix his problems. You know, people that have these issues, you know, they need treatment. I would not consider him to be a criminal. I don't think he's a bad person. You know, obviously he's got some demons that he has to deal with, and he needs help, and hopefully he gets that help.
Aaron, thank you so much. Thank you for giving us your time. Again, if you want the latest updates, go on NoDQ.com and follow him on Twitter at NoDQ.com. And also Aaron Rift, he is the man behind NoDQ.com. Follow him on Twitter at Aaron Rift. Aaron, anything upcoming up you guys working on for the website?
Not in particular, just the normal stuff. Got videos going up on a regular basis. I've been having some issues with YouTube. Hopefully that gets resolved soon. But I continue to post videos almost on a daily basis, and they're up on NoDQ.com as well. So, yeah, just check those out, and, you know, just business as usual.
Aaron, great website, man. And listen, if you ever – I know you're in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. Very nice up there. If you ever come to New York, the Olive Branch is always extended to come on and whatever you are, maybe for SummerSlam or, you know, something in wrestling – let us know when we extend the Olive Branch.
Definitely. I mean, I've been to New York several times. My parents grew up in New Jersey. Where are you guys in New York? New York City?
Jersey Wrecking Crew. That's where we are. We're in New Jersey.
Oh, nice. Very nice. My dad was born in Paterson.
Wow.
How close are you guys to that?
We are about maybe 15 minutes away from Paterson, New Jersey. We're in North Jersey by MetLife Stadium.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've been to that area several times. Yeah, I will definitely keep that in mind, you know, if I'm ever back east for whatever reason.
Aaron, thank you so much, man. Again, continued success on the website. Awesome stuff that you're doing, and, you know, this has been fun.
Not a problem. Hope to be on again sometime.
And that was Aaron Riff from NoDQ.com. Jeff, great get there. Very insightful in terms of breaking down WWE Payback, which we did, and also talking about not only the greatness, which is Chris Jericho, but also talking about the near future of what's going to happen, not only on Raw and SmackDown when it comes to title pictures and rivalries, but also potential free agents in there, as we spoke about maybe Adam Cole and the future of NXT and where it's going in right now. So a lot of great stuff that we spoke to with Aaron. And like I said, it's just amazing how we keep finding guests time and time again that have the same passion and enthusiasm that you and I have, and obviously breaking it down to what could be a pretty exciting WWE season leading up to WrestleMania.
That website is no joke, man. It's got tons of followers. A lot of people get on that. One of the top wrestling websites to get your information, and Aaron does a great job with it. So great talking to Aaron Rift. Just a few odds and ends. WWE officially parts ways with Mauro Ranallo this past week. Hey, listen, Mauro Ranallo, I don't know if it was whether it was, you know, mandated through the courts or what, but I guess it was a amicable parting of the ways. It was great to hear Mauro Ranallo on Showtime cover the boxing fight in overseas. So, listen, life goes on. Mauro Ranallo deserves better, and I think in the long run, I mean, they're both better off.
Yeah, like I said before, Ranallo is split from WWE is unfortunate, because I think in terms of what he did commentating-wise, it was something different. It was something new. It was something invigorating for me, at least, because, you know, some people would make the joke with him, like, not every match is a WrestleMania match, but I loved that enthusiasm.
His passion.
And it gave me enthusiasm to watch, to see something and be excited for it. So, sad to go, but I think Ranallo will be fine. And, you know what, they've parted ways. I'm sure a lot of people were like, you know what, he should have just completely buried the WWE. He should really said it was on his mind, but he again is one thing only, a professional, and he kept a professional. And you know, you never say never in this business. Who knows how long JBL is going to be with the WWE?
Yeah, and maybe
so you never know what's going to happen.
Find out the truth,
and
so,
maybe never. We will find out the truth. And from what I can tell, I don't know. Maybe it depends on how you perceive it to be. But it looks like the doors are still open theoretically in that sense. And it would just depend on somebody like Ranallo if he wants to do it again. I hope so. But again, in terms of that work environment, if you're ever in that type of situation, you probably just want to keep yourself out of it.
Bro, I had a great weekend this past Saturday with you, bud. I mean, catching WrestlePro, going there now. I think we've gone there now three straight times now.
Yeah, we did.
WrestlePro. So, I mean, it just keeps getting better and better. I thoroughly enjoyed the night. Starland Ballroom, a very underrated place to have a wrestling event. I think actually Fozzy performed there once a few years back at the ballroom in Sayreville, New Jersey. So that's where the Wrecking Crew were. And, you know, just great set of matches. We talked to Chris Painter on a previous show. He had a great matchup with Moose. Dave Sturcher was pulling double duty. He was commentating and
also
the ring announcer. Thank God, because that ring announcer absolutely sucked. Who was there before? This not pulling any punches, but we couldn't even hear the audio. We couldn't even tell who, you know, it was just
It was just so distorted. At least with Dave, he did a great job of, you know, he's got the voice where, you know, you can really understand him. He pronounces everything really well, and it looks like he was having the time of his life, although, you know, afterwards he was probably exhausted from, you know, not only doing that and commentating at the same time, but just great to see him as well, and see and know all the other talent around there. Again, you know, talk to Pat Buck a little bit and talking to him and Chris Matthews as well. So it's just really cool. Sorry, Kevin Matthews, my mistake, Chris Matthews. I'm thinking of somebody else. But it's just great to see all the talent there, and you know, making friends in places where I think Russell Pro has the right approach. I think a promoter like Pat Buck has the right mindset of what he wants to do. So it's just kind of interesting and exciting for the first time. I mean, a lot of people give indie wrestling a lot of slack in terms of you know, it's lower tier, but no, you have a lot of quality there. So it's going to be exciting to see what the future holds for Russell Pro.
Yeah, very excited to watch it and to be a small part of it. But their next event is May 20th.
We contribute when we can.
Yeah, maybe we'll have an announcement here or there in the future on about May 20th. But you know, all in all, man, just a great time. They do a great job. And I think what they do is, you know, they don't interject a lot of, like, you know, they had DDP there, but they don't make them the main focus. They make them a piece of it. And then you had an amazing street fight between Kevin Matthews and Danny Math, which was crazy.
Danny Math is no joke, man. You wouldn't want to mess up, you know, I wouldn't want to square up against that guy. That guy's a monster.
Search his Twitter. Go on Google. I posted some stuff on Facebook, on my Facebook, Jeff Martin, him throwing one of the amazing graces. You got to see this one. I think I did this video justice. So I think it was really cool to see just the havoc and carnage that Danny Math causes in the ring every time he's there. I do suggest, strongly suggest, check him out. Check a video out. He is really a mean SOB.
He definitely is. And again, the show was great. It was it definitely had a little bit of everything for anybody there. So they do a great job of doing that. And like I said, the future looks bright for Russell Pro. We'll see what happens. Their next event would be in Rahway, New Jersey. You know, have a lot more star power coming up there too. But again, like you mentioned before, it's not really so much about the star power, but kind of just putting on a good show, which, you know, when you talk about indie wrestling, you think that's not possible. But Russell Pro does a really good job of doing that.
But I'm a little sad because just as Jericho left, we got to leave too. We're done with the show.
Well, you know, all good things come to an end, Jeff. And if you guys have been listening to this, you know you're going to anticipate next week when we come out with a brand new episode. So if you guys want to catch those brand new episodes and the guests we're going to have on, catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. So for the Jersey Ren crew, Jeff Martin, one half my tag team partner, I am the trendsetter, Brian Berger. Thank you so much for listening to the High Spot Podcast. Have a brand new episode next week. So after listening to this episode and what's happened in the past week with Jeff and I this weekend, oh, life is just too sweet.
Y2J, Y2J, Y2J.
You just made the list.